Bibles this morning, turn first to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, the first part of it is fairly familiar to us. And it follows Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 is often referred to as the Hall of Fame of Faith. And Hebrews 11, the writer goes through a history of some of the biggest and greatest personalities of the Old Testament and talks about how they overcame items in their life, situations in their life because of faith. And it refers to them, and as I'll read in a moment in the first part of Hebrews 12, as a great cloud of witnesses. Because, you see, they are the overcomers. They are the ones that we should emulate, that we should try to pattern our lives after. But let me read, beginning at Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I'm sure if you've been around church for very long, you've heard this passage preached on. And usually the tone of that preaching is looking back at chapter 11, at Abraham, at Moses, at all of these great heroes of the faith. The tone of a lot of those sermons has been, those guys are watching, and therefore we should strive to be like them. Well, I'm going to take a bit of a turn from that typical teaching on that passage. Because you see, Moses and Abraham and David and all of those characters that we read about in that hall of fame of heroes of the faith have lived, have died, have graduated to the heavenly places, and they are not going to be influenced one iota by our witness. However, we are indeed surrounded by a great crowd of witnesses. They're all around us. They're the people sitting next to you in these chairs. They're the people who are your workmates. They are the people you meet in the store. They are the people you meet on the street. They are the people that you sometimes have contentions with. We are truly surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And here's a note to you, Christian. They're watching you. Because you see, the words that come out of your mouth are just a part of your witness. And you can stand and testify in a church house on a Sunday morning, and you can say anything you want to, and that may carry a little bit of sway for somebody that hears it, but I'll tell you what carries a whole lot more sway. What you do when there's no checkout lines open at Walmart and you got to use the self-check. What you say when that guy with 38 items in his buggy cuts in front of you with you holding your two and gets in line before you. They're watching what happens when you go to the restaurant after church and your order's wrong or it's too slow. They're watching what you do when the idiot cuts you off in traffic. They're watching. They're listening. They're hearing what you say. They're reading the expression on your face. How many have forced a smile and said, "It's all right," when the thought in your mind was, "I want to choke you"? You know what? People ain't stupid. They look through your plastic smile and see the look in your eyes, and they know what you meant. That great crowd of cloud of witnesses that surrounds us are still in a place that they can be influenced by your witness and your testimony. They are the ones that we ought to be thinking about. We're not going to change Moses' mind, nor his eternal destiny, nor anything about what he did by the way we act and react. But I tell you, we're going to change our next door neighbor. We're going to influence him. We're either going to tell him, hey, there's something to this Christianity stuff, or they're going to tell him, I knew it was all fake. Yeah, I hear what he says at church, and I look at how he reacts in the neighborhood. Next door neighbor's dog made a visit to the front yard. How'd he act? Listen, what is so important is our testimony. It's our witness. We need to talk about what a testimony is. You know, Revelation 12:11 says they overcame by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. But I'm here to tell you, your testimony is much more than the words that come out of your mouth. Testimony is got the same root word as a testament. When you pass, they will gather around and they'll read a document. And what's it called? Your last will and testament. A testament indicates a legacy, a heritage, an inheritance. We call this book of the Bible, we call the first two-thirds of it the Old Testament. It's a will. It's a legacy. It's an inheritance. And we call the last third of it a New Testament. Okay? It also has the power, the function of a will or a legacy or an inheritance. It talks about our inheritance in God if we are believers in God. Okay? It's something that lasts. It's not a testament, and a testimony is not something that happens in a minute and it's done and gone. It's something that lasts. It has a legacy. It has an impact. It endures and it affects others. So we need to think about what our testimony is, because our testimony will create a testament to what was your life all about. Did you influence people for good or influence people for evil? Or did you sit by and do nothing? What is your testament? What is your testimony? In our modern world, it strikes me as I need to stop and think about what comprises our testimony. Let me start by saying this. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 22, Christian, you are instructed to avoid even the appearance of doing evil. But I didn't really do anything. Yeah, but it looked bad. You know what people see? People see a lot of things on the surface. There's always the story told of the fella that had a perfectly good reason to walk into the saloon on Main Street on midday to go deliver a message to someone, and somebody saw him coming out, and oh boy, let the gossip start. Anybody here Andy Griffith fan? There's a little movie done 50 or more years ago called Angel in My Pocket. And Andy Griffith was a small-town preacher, right? And the church needed an organ. Well, it happened that the burlesque house was going to start using taped music and was going to sell their organ. So the preacher drives his car to the next town, parks it in front of the burlesque house, and goes in to test the organ. And while he is testing the organ, it just so happens that a young lady wants to audition for the show. And the little old lady, you know those snoopy little old ladies that have to know everybody's business? They see the car and they creep up and they pull the door open and they peek inside. And here's the preacher playing the organ while the young lady's taking it off on stage. What we see isn't always the whole truth. Right? Now, a big long-windy story to get to the point of this. There are people watching and they're paying attention. So let's listen. What creates your reputation? What creates your testimony? It's the sum total of everything that people see you do. It's the sum total of everything people hear you say. And in today's world, we've got to add a very, very powerful tool to that. You know, my son got disciplined at one of his workplaces for a social media post he made. He's an auto technician. There was a forum of other auto technicians, and they were complaining about how the system at dealerships sometimes gives them a raw deal. Tim made a comment on that, and he was called into the office for his social media comment. How many know that people, if you go to apply for a job today, one of the first things they're going to do is they're going to look you up on Facebook, and they're going to see what you post. And if they don't agree with it, you're not getting hired. But you see, that is a lasting legacy. What you post, people will look at that and say, well, he likes gothic horror movies. I don't know if he can be a Christian or not. He likes heavy metal rock and roll music. I don't know about that. He made a comment on a post about the occult. Need I go on? Because you see, it's witnessing to a great cloud of witnesses. Everybody that sees your social media, it's witnessing to them. But you know who are some of the worst to look at that and make judgments? People who sit in these chairs and in chairs like them and in pews all around. Somebody will look at somebody's social media post and they'll jump to a judgment. They'll forget the other 99% of their life and they'll look at a social media post and they'll throw you out with yesterday's newspaper. Don't need a newspaper, we got social media. Listen. The world is watching. And they have no filter. They will judge you. And what's scary is the people inside the community of God will do the same, usually with a harsher standard. We look at, you go to the restaurant and you order an alcohol-free pina colada, and somebody sees that thing sitting on your table. Did you see? Sister so-and-so was drinking. Did you see? They went to such and such a concert or such and such an event. Did you see? And they become judge, jury, and executioner as far as you are concerned. Now, Christian, you've heard it preached, thou shalt not judge. You judge, you'll be judged. But then again, if you read the rest of the New Testament, there's a whole bunch of stuff we're supposed to judge in the house of God. Starting with yourself. If you're going to accuse somebody of something, you might ought to look in the mirror and see if you reflect that same thing to somebody else. If you're going to condemn somebody for something they did that you have been blessed to walk out of, you might consider that you once were where they were. What is the goal of the Christian church? To reach people for Jesus, to make disciples, to restore people to right relationship with God. It is not to us to be judge, jury, and executioner and throw people out with last night's trash. That's not our job. Our job is to do what Jesus would do. Now, Jesus said some harsh things to people, didn't he? He pulled no punches. But at the end of the day, what was his goal? His goal was to restore people to relationship with God. If we are called Christians, if we are called little Christs, our job is to restore people to relationship with God. How dare we throw somebody away? Somebody comes in here with a three-piece biker cut and looks like death warmed over with 87 tattoos and a surly look on his face. Jesus would like to restore that man. And, oh, by the way, he might have already done so. Somebody walks in here that closed the bar on Main Street last night, still reeking of last night's vomit and alcohol. Jesus wants to reach that person. Somebody living in a cardboard box under the parking structure, Jesus wants to reach that person. How dare we judge? But you know who Jesus also wants to reach? That brother and sister sitting next to you who you've got a sorry attitude about. Jesus wants to reach them too. Jesus wants to reach you because of your sorry attitude about your brother and sister. One of the harshest judgments in the Old Testament was against the children of Israel for grumbling and complaining. Not for idolatry, not for following the pagans, grumbling and complaining. I will give you the 11th commandment. Get over it. Many of you who've been here a long time have heard Mike Barnett say, you know what, you got a grudge against somebody, and what you want to do is keep them in a little cage, and every so often you open the cage, you pull them out, beat them up a little bit, and shove them back in the cage. We do it. We do it all the time. And you know what? More than that person is confined in that cage, you are chained to that cage if you're holding a grudge against somebody. If you're being judgmental and hateful against somebody, you are bound to them. There's a passage in Scripture that talks about deliver me from this body of death. You've probably heard it taught on. There was a punishment in the ancient world where if you killed someone, they would strap their dead body to you and let the rot from that dead body kill you. Holding grudges does that. It is a body of death, and it will kill you. Get over it. What somebody did 20 years ago has no bearing on today. Get over it. What somebody said in the heat of anger, get over it. If you feel slighted, get over it. Nobody said this world was fair, folks. Nobody guarantees your happiness. One of our political problems today is people read life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as a guarantee. Well, happiness isn't guaranteed, honey. It's the pursuit of it. Last time I had heard anything, pursuit required effort. That wasn't in the notes or the plans. What I want to reach you with this morning is this. Think about how you are seen. Many of you wouldn't have walked out of the house this morning without looking in the mirror to be sure the hair and the makeup was just right and the clothes were, you know, the buttons weren't offset one button and, you know, you didn't look like you just crawled out from under a rock somewhere. We need to do that spiritually too. I'll tell you this. Some of you know this, Myla in particular. Pastor John got a short fuse. And he also will blame himself if the sun don't shine tomorrow. I recognize that. I've been working on it a lifetime. And it ain't easy to walk out of, and sometimes you fall back in the rut. But you know what? At the end of the day, if you look in the mirror, if you don't see a little reflection of Jesus, you need to gussy up whatever's keeping you from looking like Jesus. I make mistakes. I say things I shouldn't say. I don't say things that I should say. And I think you all probably look a whole lot like me. But we got to be better. The Christian walk is an uphill climb, children. Salvation, it begins at the cross. It begins with salvation. It begins with surrendering to God. But there ought to be an uphill climb, and we ought to look a little more like Jesus today than we did yesterday and look a little more like Him tomorrow. And no, it's not always easy. And yes, it does take effort. Because I tell you, there's a little thing in science called inertia. Inertia says a body in motion wants to stay in motion, and a body at rest wants to stay at rest. And if you don't apply energy at some point in time, that body at rest ain't ever going to go nowhere unless some outside force applies it. Somebody outside batters it around and moves it. I'd a whole lot rather be with the guidance of Jesus applying the energy and moving myself Godward than sitting dead and rotting. The Bible speaks of living water. Living water has some characteristics to it. It's full of oxygen. It's moving. It stays fresh. It flows from a source and goes where it needs to go, as opposed to stagnant water. Stagnant water sits there and it concentrates more and more of the bad things that are in the water, and it grows algae. And pretty soon it's not life-giving, it's life-taking. Living water. You're supposed to be living water. That means you're supposed to be moving. You're supposed to be bringing life. We can't live without water, right? We got to have water to live. The plants that we eat and the animals that eat those plants that we also eat, all that has to have water or it doesn't work. The desert's a dry and barren place, and a lot of us have been living in there for a while. We need to cut the water loose. Break down the dam that's holding it up. And for a lot of us, the dam is old judgments, old grudges, holding on to old hurts and hindrances, holding on to our preconceived notions about people. We just don't need to crack that dam. We need to load it up and blow it up and let the living water that Jesus wants to pour into you, pour through you. I love this church and I love you. And I wouldn't be the pastor that I need to be if I didn't say harsh things when harsh things need to be said. And I've got to tell you that sometimes I sit on things too long and let them fester before I deal with them. I'm turning a page. If I confront you, it's because I love you. And I love everybody else in this room. I'll try my hardest never to jump to a conclusion. But if it needs fixing, it needs fixing. And I ask you to do the same. I ask you to look in your heart and see what it is you need to fix this morning. If you see something in me, I want you to tell me. In love with the goal of restoration. If I hear someone in this body go knock somebody down a peg, you're going to have to deal with me. And you won't like it. Church, the altars are open. Go ahead, guys, with altars are open. I ask you to look carefully at yourself and do the business with God you need to do. If you need to be born again, come and see me and we'll pray together. If you have a particular need, come to the front and we will pray with you. If you just want to quietly spend some time with God, the altars are there. I want you to look at who's moving first. And all who will believe will
will sing the song of ages to the Lamb.
We live in a time right now where there is great opportunity in this nation. Through a combination of circumstances that weren't always pleasant, God's opened a door to people who want something that means something, to people who want something that has power. Young people in this nation have been sick and tired of old people preaching a church that has no power, preaching a religion that has not transformed them. And they want something that means something. They are hungry. 300 and some at Perry Central going to FCA. 100 and something at Hazard High School going to FCA. I don't know about Buckhorn. I assume they've got one too. Young people want something. And we are the conduit through which God moves for them to get what it is they need and what they crave. And oh, by the way, we're going to get blessed in the middle of it too.
If you bear his name, sing the song.
We can't play games. We can't wear masks.
Sing the song.
Halloween was a couple of days ago. We don't pretend to be something we're not. Throw the mask away and be the Christian God called you to be. And I'm going to try my hardest to be the one he's called me to be. And I'll tell you, sometimes it ain't easy. Sometimes it ain't easy. Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes you look in the mirror and say, my God, I don't recognize that person and I don't really like them. Well, here's the good news. God wants a change in you. He wants a change in me. What in this holy world are we waiting for? Why be miserable another day? Why be defeated another day? Why let the same old things beat us up over and over and over again? It's a new day. God's promises are new every morning. Do what he's calling you to do.